Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Colin Goddard, whose life changed after surviving the Virginia Tech massacre in April of 2007, the worst shooting in American history. He, while enrolled as a fourth-year student at Virginia Tech pursuing an international studies degree, Colin Goddard was shot four times and was one out of seven of a class of 17 to survive the shooting. He has three of the four bullets still in his body, as well as a titanium rod implanted in his left femur. An accidental crusader against gun violence, his story is documented in the film Living for 32, and as the Assistant Director of Legislative Affairs at the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence in Washington, D.C., Colin Goddard is currently traveling around the country with the film and sharing his story in an effort to educate, advocate, and mobilize Americans to get involved in preventing gun violence. Welcome to Background Briefing, Colin Goddard.
Thanks for having me.
And Colin, of course, as it happens, we talk tragically too often, and because every time I talk to you, it's usually after the last one was the Aurora shooting in Colorado, then something just more recently there was a shooting in a shopping mall in Oregon, and now, of course, this appalling tragedy in Connecticut, which is the second worst shooting since the Virginia Tech massacre that you were a victim of. But I think in terms of moral outrage, and I think the extent to which we have to look at ourselves as a country and as a people and take responsibility and own what just happened, the hideous nature of what just happened is so appalling that I had to turn off the media. I mean, I feel sorry for you, Colin, that you've got a job to do, right?
Right. I mean, I was trying to wrap my head around what happened in Oregon last week, and then, you know, when I got to the office on Friday morning and turned on my Twitter feed, and I saw it come over my Twitter feed, I deflated in my chair. I couldn't believe it. And when I heard it was at an elementary school, you know, I knew this was going to be bad, and it's been a tough 24 hours, 48 hours for me. But I mean, the folks in Connecticut are in a much worse spot. I mean, I know what they're going through now. I know what it's like, you know, to get that phone call and have to make that phone call to a loved one, telling them that you're in the hospital or they got to go to a hospital for somebody that they care about, and they're not knowing how they are. Hospitals don't really tell you over the phone the condition of your loved one until you get there. But, you know, it's been incredible what I have seen, the outpouring of support and the outrage on this issue, particularly since Friday, than I've ever been before. I mean, I've never seen anything quite like this. And I think just the fact that this was little kids, man, I mean, is just making people understand that there really is something that needs to change. And I think people are understanding that if they just send their sympathies and condolences and light candles, that's not going to stop this next thing from happening again to somebody else. And they're realizing that it's their involvement, it's their outrage and activity that's going to change things. It's really going to be all of us coming together to demand that we have a safer country for all of us. And I believe it's a matter of when, not if.
So, Colin, what this latest massacre at the school in Connecticut seems to have in common with the Virginia Tech shooting, of which you were a victim, and you still carry three of the four bullets in you, and you were shot four times, and you won out of seven of the class of 17 to survive the shooting. It looks as though the perpetrator of this latest outrage had mental illness, and there's no question that the perpetrator of the Virginia Tech shooting also had mental illness. And it turns out that the state judge had deemed him mentally ill, but that information was not in the FBI's database. So it's extraordinary for all of the platitudes we hear about, you know, we'll get through this, we'll get through it, and we'll come out stronger at the other end, and all that nonsense that goes on in the media when these things happen. Nobody wants to actually talk about why they keep happening. And to my mind, the real issue to focus on here is that there is no correlation for law enforcement between those who are mentally ill and those who are able to buy firearms.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that talking about gun policy and mental health policy has been taboo in this country for some time, but I think it's really incidences like these that bring these issues back to light, and I think we're understanding that these keep coming up. We have to really address this, and I'm absolutely right. Shootings like Virginia Tech and this one in Connecticut kind of highlight the intersect between our gun policy and our mental health policy. You know, I mean, it's fundamentally that the people, happy people, don't do things like this, you know. It's a subject area that, you know, is now being talked about, which is long overdue in my opinion. You know, we really have to understand that, you know, we've already failed these kids in Connecticut. I mean, we shouldn't be totally setting our policies based on the most recent shooting that just occurred. You know, we should be thinking about the next group of children who we can save, who we could prevent having to go through something like that. You know, that's when you should step back and you look at, well, what really makes sense? You know, what should we do something about the 40% of gun sales that occur in this country that go unchecked in every year? I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. There's not just one single policy, you know, with guns or mental health that's gonna you know, save everybody. But it's really a strong framework of it all working together and communicating together that's gonna make things improve for all of us, you know? I learned that the guy in Connecticut tried to buy a gun at a store, but because of Connecticut's law that requires a waiting period, he left and didn't go that route. Instead, he went to his mother, who apparently did not have the guns locked and stored safely, and also he's not required to report any stolen guns. So, you know, you really need a strong framework of these policies to help identify people who could be dangerous to themselves or others, get them the help that they need, but also limit their easy availability that they have to dangerous, lethal firepower.
Again, I'm speaking with Colin Goddard, whose life changed after surviving the Virginia Tech massacre of 2007, the worst shooting in American history, while enrolled as a fourth-year student of Virginia Tech, pursuing an international studies degree. Colin Goddard was shot four times and was one out of seven of the class of 17 to survive the shooting. He still has three of the four bullets in his body, as well as a titanium rod implanted in his left femur. One of the things that I find extraordinary about this repeated atrocities is that when a crazy guy tried to ignite a shoe aboard an airplane, the so-called shoe bomber, what that resulted in was a national regime where we all have to take our shoes off at airports. So there's the cause and effect is massive. The whole government jumped into gear and came up with this regime as a result of one person's actions. Yet time and time again, these people shoot any number of innocent victims and just massacre them in the way that happened to you at Virginia Tech and just happened in Connecticut, and nothing happens. Now, there's an article in Sunday's New York Times, the Justice Department shelved ideas to improve gun background checks, apparently after the shooting of the congresswoman in Arizona, Gabby Giffords. The Justice Department looked into improving laws to prevent future massacres. And they apparently got completely sidetracked by this bogus, ginned-up, pseudo-controversy that Daryl Issa and the Republicans came up with over the so-called Operation Fast and Furious. So give us a sense, since you work for the Brady campaign in Washington trying to bring about sensible gun laws, give us a sense of what you're up against, because clearly you know, nobody in this country seems to be able to get a handle on why it is that nothing can be done. And we all know that at the end of the day, a lot of it has to do with the NRA, the National Rifle Association.
Right, but I mean, I really don't know why the NRA is involved in this discussion. I mean, you know, what happened at that school in Connecticut was not somebody exercising their Second Amendment rights, so this really shouldn't be part of the discussion. You know, unfortunately, I think the first part of the lack of action comes from the fact that most Americans assume that we already have these laws in place that keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people to begin with. I mean, that's what I thought before I got shot and was blown away when I learned that we actually don't even do background checks on everybody, you know, let alone have systems of licensing and registration that I thought were in place. So once people realize that, you know, there are steps that we can take that we just, our decision makers just have chosen not to yet, then they realize, wow, you know, this is something that needs to be done. And I think that's the disconnect. You know, we also have to, you know, make it so that our elected officials understand that there is a large number of their constituents who want to see something done. And the more people voice that directly to those who represent them, it creates a space for these people to not worry so much about what money could be thrown at them from the gun manufacturers and their lobbying arm in the NRA, and do what's right for the public safety of all of us. You know, I mean, nobody wants to see what happened in Connecticut happen again, you know? And it really means that the missing piece has been the outrage. You know, many, many fundamental changes and problems in our country have resulted from public outrage, sustained outrage, and sustained involvement in the civic process until something is done. You know, this is on every level, from local government all the way to our president. And speaking to our president, I mean, his remarks that he gave on Friday, you know, that we have to take meaningful action despite the politics, I think, you know, he's getting at what we're getting at here. I mean, the man is from Chicago. I think he understands gun violence in a very fundamental way. But the politics for him have left him to think previously that he couldn't do anything. So now we need to show him that, yes, he can do something about this. And so that's why we created wearebetterthanthis.org for people who believe that we are better than this, that we deserve a nation that's safer than this, to go and voice their concerns with us, to engage with us, and we can all then direct ourselves towards, you know, the correct elected official at the correct time to make sure this, you know, something actually gets done, so that what happened in Newtown, Connecticut becomes less likely to happen to another American city.
Well, Colin Goddard, we did do something about it. We did have an assault weapons ban, and then it was allowed to expire in 2004. And the champion of that assault weapons ban was Senator Dianne Feinstein, who rose to prominence here in the state of California because her colleague was shot in San Francisco. It was depicted in a movie about Harvey Milk, who was also one of the, but Mayor Moscone was her boss at the time, and she is now reintroducing the same legislation, the assault weapons ban. What's your sense of her chances? I think it's probably going to happen on Monday.
Well, I've had heard that as well, and I do believe that it's actually not the same bill that she had introduced before. It's updated. It's been improved. She understood that, you know, the problems and the flaws in the original bill, and, you know, to the extent that firearm manufacturers were able to change a few cosmetic features on their guns and then rename them and basically put the same kind of firepower weapon back out there on the market. So, you know, she's understood that. I hope she's addressed that in this new language. I mean, we've had an inundation of phone calls from people here in D.C. and folks from state legislatures across the country looking to see how, you know, what can we do? What can we do to make some progress to move forward? You know, like I said, this is the time for all of us to let our elected officials know that this is something we want them to do, that we have their back. If they take up, you know, if they go out and stand up on this issue, they don't have to worry about the gun lobby. They should be more concerned about each one of us and our safety. And we have to prove that to them now. And if we do, I mean, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think that they would make the right decision, you know. So for you know, to the extent that all of us can engage on this issue at this time when it is most critical, I implore everyone listening to please do so.
Well, Colin Goddard, the president will be speaking later today in Newtown, Connecticut. And, I don't know what he's going to say. A lot of people are hoping he'll say something meaningful. He did indicate that he might. His press secretary made a ridiculous statement. But we'll see. What are you expecting to say? Or I guess also, what do you hope he says?
I mean, he's said previously very specific things on our background check system that allows people, you know, to be denied from one gun seller and turn around and buy a gun from somebody else without a check. You know, he understands the reality of that situation. He understands, you know, that military weapons are being shown up on our streets from, you know, inner city Chicago to our schools in Connecticut, you know. I mean, he understands, you know, the specific policy initiatives that could help save lives. You know, we have to take this, and actually I've seen this, which is heartening, is to see the media no longer speaking in the sense of, oh, well, should everybody have a gun or should we get rid of all guns? I mean, neither of those two options is a reality in this country. So we should look at what is, which is the reasonable middle ground, which is legitimate background checks on every single gun sale, which is limiting the types of military firepower that we sell to the general public. You know, the president has spoken to those two points exactly, and I think that's where a lot of us have consensus. Even the times that we've polled NRA members and gun owners, those are two issues where we find a broad level of support. You know, it's really what we hear about through the NRA is just their leadership, is their big bosses and CEOs and fundraisers here in D.C. But the average American, the average decent human being understands that background checks on all gun sales and limiting the types of military weapons is something that we all need to get done.
But Colin Goddard, it seems to me require more in a sense that if we drive a vehicle, which could be a lethal weapon because we have a lot of people killed in car accidents, presumably that is why you go through a fairly rigorous process to get a driver's license, and you have to be tested by the state and allowed as a license to drive a car. It's the same thing with flying an aeroplane. You have to have a certain amount of skill because, there are lives at stake. Well, there are lives at stake with guns. And here you have a situation that just happened where this mother, who was the first victim of this latest massacre, had this gun collection, and she had a mentally disturbed son, and he apparently was able to get to her guns. And you mentioned, I didn't really know this, but he apparently had previously tried to buy a gun in Connecticut. So I don't understand why it is that she could have an arsenal in at home and not be required to secure it and be more socially responsible. I mean, I just don't understand why it is that we have to have licenses for other things that could cause death, but not, or the abuse of which could cause death, and not for guns, which the specific purpose of guns is to cause death.
Ian, I think a lot of that makes sense, you know. But unfortunately, you know, this issue as it's been stagnant for so long, you know, we're trying to get on base here. You know, we're not swinging for the home run. You know, we're trying to get on base. We're trying to put points on the board. This is you know, these two issues are the particular two where there is so much common ground. You know, and we're going with that. You know, and this is why I joined this fight. This is why I joined this cause. This is why I work for the Brady campaign. I mean, I'm not in this for a career, for a lifelong working on gun policy. I'm in this to do my part to move the ball forward, to legitimize a market that is currently not legitimate and allows dangerous people with records to easily get their hands on a gun. You know, that's going to be some low-hanging fruit that we can fix, and it will become a safer place for all of us, not just at our schools or at our daycare centers or at our churches or at our malls or movie theaters. That's safer for everyone, and I think that's the first step that we can all take together.
Well, Colin Goddard, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks so much for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Colin Goddard, whose life changed after surviving the Virginia Tech massacre of April 2007, the worst shooting in American history. Now, of course, the second worst has just occurred in Newtown, Connecticut, involving 26 and 7-year-old schoolchildren, along with five female teachers and the mother of the disturbed young man who conducted this massacre, and of course he killed himself. While enrolled as a fourth-year student at Virginia Tech, pursuing an international studies degree, Colin Goddard was shot four times and was one out of seven of a class of 17 to survive the shooting. He has three of the four bullets still in his body, as well as a titanium rod implanted in his left femur. He's an accidental crusader against gun violence, and his story is documented in the film Living for 32. And as the Assistant Director of Legislative Affairs at the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence in Washington, D.C., Colin Goddard currently travels across the country with the film and shares his story in an effort to educate, advocate, and mobilize Americans to get involved in preventing gun violence. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me and I'll answer your questions as best I can. The conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.